Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 301, my interview with improv leader Jermaine Trice. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts, including this one. Don't forget, you can listen to Yes But Why through the Audible app if you like. Do it now. Go to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. Let us help you get started with your new podcast or give you advice on the podcast you're already working on. Whatever we can do for you, let us help you. Mention code YBY20 and you can get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. Let us help. PodcastCadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chatted with Jermaine Trice, improviser and artistic director of the Improv Place in the U.S. From dancing to writing poetry to making funny videos, Jermaine Trice has been looking his whole life for new ways to be creative. But making theater has a lot of closed doors. So in 2019, Jermaine created the Improv Place, a safe haven for performers who are overlooked, underutilized, and misunderstood by mainstream theaters. Listen in as I learn more about Jermaine's passion for cooking, technology, and improv. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 301. Jermaine Trice gives a stage to underrepresented performers. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
I guess for me, it's kind of like I'm a naturally shy person. Until the cameras are on or until I'm on stage. And then it's like, it's just a switch.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. That makes sense. I was going to say, my first connection with you was when was on Facebook. You were showcasing some delicious food that you had made, and you popped yourself in the photo, which I thought was just the cutest. And I was like, oh, who's this fun guy taking a picture with his food? Like, I love that, you know, most of us are like taking pictures of the food, but you're like, here's the food and me. And I just thought it was just so adorable. And I was like, this
which
guy's going to be my
more
friend.
Delicious?
Right. Who's the cutest? Is it the pie or me? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I was like, oh yeah, this guy gets it. This guy is fun. He's taking selfies with his cherry pies. It's a good time. Well, let's get those cameras on you then. Let's kick her off. Let's talk about how you played as a child. What was the way that you were kicking around as a kid with your friends or your siblings?
I'm the youngest of seven.
Whoa.
Yeah. So growing up in the 70s, it was kind of weird being the youngest of seven because the closest to my age sibling is 7 years older than me. So it's like, okay, guess I'm not hanging out with you.
Oh, so there were like all these adults in your life. Like there were just a ton of older people.
Yeah, like by the time I became like, you know, a teenager or even before that, yeah, it was like, all of my older brothers and sister were like, you know, adults. And it's like, yeah. So my sister, who's the oldest, her oldest daughter, my niece, is the same age as me. Actually, she is 5 days older than me. So it was like, you know, my sister and my mom were like having a race, like, I'm going to be first. No, I'm going to be first. No. So, yeah. Wow. I used to tell an improper story about, you know, how, but I'm not going to tell that story.
No, come on. As long as you're not offended, I'm not offended. You can tell whatever story you want.
I would tell this story about how, and it's a fake story, but how my mom and my sister used to club together and they were at the same party and, you know.
They were like, hey, what's going on?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
You know, there would be all kinds of crazy stuff going on in the 60s and 70s. So, yeah, that could have happened. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of fun parties. That's pretty much what I've heard about the 60s and 70s is just like good parties. You know, I saw the ice storm. I understand that you know, passing keys and wife swapping.
Toss your keys in the bowl.
Yeah. I mean, you just never know how that's going to happen. And then, you know, 9 months later, you have a brother and a niece. And it's like, you know, it's just like you're all good. Like, it's just fake story. This is not real. This is not real. Jermaine's mom and sister are honorable ladies having babies in an honorable way. Yes. You know, it's funny when you mentioned, as far as this internet is going to say. That's right. Fact. I thought it was funny that you mentioned growing up in the 70s as the youngest of seven. I really thought you were going to go another way. Like, so it was the 70s, so no parents cared at all. And I just Lord of the Flies grew up and they were like, wait, we had a seventh kid? Like, they, you know.
It was a little bit like that. But being the youngest, you know, I was pampered by my mom a lot, because it's like, okay, you're the last one, but you know,
fingers crossed.
But with all the older people, still all living at home, and my mom being a single mom, it was like they were around more.
Oh,
so there would be all kinds of crazy things that me as a kid was like, oh, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like for instance, this was in the 70s and it was, not uncommon to be growing marijuana, in the house, sorry, in the apartment. So yeah.
I feel like it's pretty commonplace today as well. So, you know, things are kind of coming around full circle.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah. And you're like, what's this? Are we gardening? And they're like, yes, don't touch it.
Yeah. But as far as like playing goes, like my niece and I usually would play together, and my nephew, who's like 4 years younger, so we would play like make believe. So we grew up extremely poor. So the game that we started playing a lot is pretending to be rich.
So
for some reason, like as a kid, in the 70s, you think being rich meant that you had a British accent and you drank tea a lot.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
So we would always have like, you know, act like we're like, you know, drinking tea and talking about all of our houses and cars with the British accent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of our houses and cars. Multiple houses, multiple cars. That's how you know you've hit it. I like it. I also have that association with British accents. Sorry, everyone who's listening to this from the UK, but it's true. Growing up in the US, you like think that a British accent means rich and fancy. Like, that's just what they told you. And so that's what it is, right? How weird. That's like some deep colonial shit right there. Ooh. Oh, man. I totally appreciate this idea, though, that like you guys really got social media early on. You didn't have it yet, but you guys were doing your own like YouTube videos for each other where you were like, yes, I really enjoy having money. Or Oh, I really enjoy having money. Yeah, there we go. British accent. I'm terrible with accents. But like, I really love that idea. That's like, I definitely did that as a kid. Like, I definitely remember talking about the number of cars that I would have, even though I don't care about cars mm-hmm. at all. But like, yeah. I'm going to be honest. I'm still one of those people who like peruses the million-dollar homes on the Zillow and whatnot. And I'm all like, yeah, this is plausible. This is a thing. I'm going to do this. It's all right. Yeah. Dreaming is nice. It's fun. I really enjoy that. So when you and your cousins were wandering around as rich people, were you, what were you doing? Were you like sort of playing house as rich people, or were you like having adventures? What was the meat of your make believe?
We would like basically play house, or we'd have some sort of not necessarily adventures, because most of the time we were, especially when we're younger, we would be inside, indoors, just because of where we lived, wasn't super safe to be out by yourself. We would imagine we're at some location. It would usually be at one of our multiple houses, and we'd go on some sort of journey there. It was kind of like, I guess like you would consider it like a sitcom. So we would kind of mimic some of the things we saw on TV, from like, my older siblings watching whatever was on at the time. MASH was a thing. So, I completely hated that show, but my brothers love that show, or some Westerns. So we would kind of mimic those sorts of things, like a Western with someone with a British accent was kind of interesting.
Hey, absolutely. Absolutely. I love a good Western. Yeah. Yeah. And that's super fun. I enjoy that. You grew up in Chicago, right?
Yes, I did. Someone has done their research. I grew up, born and raised in Chicago, south side of Chicago, like in the city. And, it was very interesting. One of the things it just popped in my head when you said Chicago was, there was a blizzard of 1979. It was a really huge blizzard. And I remember my niece and I going out. My mom took us out in the blizzard, and we had like our five layers plus our snowsuits. And we were like, we were not that young. We were like seven or something like that. But we're like in our snowsuits, like, oh. It was... for some reason, that just flashed in my head when you said you grew up in Chicago.
just a remembrance of a lot of snow. You're like, yes, snow days.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm originally from Boston, so I totally get you when it comes to snowsuits and, you know, falling into snow drifts and you can't get out because you're, like, stuck in a snowsuit. You're like, somebody help me. I can't move my arms.
Yeah, but at least you had the chowder. You had the chowder and the lobster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to keep us warm. Yeah, to keep us warm. We had some warm clam and some warm, you know, lobster. To keep us warm. Yeah, absolutely. They're like, come on inside. No, that was not the... I was like, I feel like lobster makes me think of summer, to be honest with you. So I'm like, were we eating lobster in the winter? I'm not sure. Oh, yeah. No, I remember the only time I ever went to Chicago was while I was in college. One of my friends from college was from Chicago, and we went and hung out with him for like a week over winter break. And it was the wrong idea because we went and stayed with him, and it was like nice the day we arrived. And then like we went to sleep and woke up, and the whole world was covered in snow. And my friend's dad was like, cool, I have two extra hands to help shovel, right? I thankfully had experience doing some shoveling, but our other friend who had come to stay was from Texas and was just like, I don't understand. What do I do with this? Like, we just gave him a broom and we're like, well, figure it out. It's fine. We're like digging. You mean the dad's like, yeah, get in there, guys. Good. This was a great idea having these kids visit. Like, oh, man. I was like, this seems weird to be shoveling on vacation. And he was like, who's not shoveling on vacation? I was like, you're right. I'd be doing it at home if I wasn't doing it at your house. Yeah, all I think about is snow when I think about Chicago. I've never been there in what I hear is a beautiful summertime, you know?
Yeah, it's really nice in the summertime with so much lakefront available and so many activities all down the Lake Michigan. It's really, really nice in the summer. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite festivals going to there was Taste of Chicago. So what happens is there is a bunch of the more popular restaurants, come together. They all have like booths, set up down, they shut off like 4 city blocks or something like that, 5 city blocks downtown. And they all come there and you can like get tickets and you can use those tickets to purchase like, sample food from different restaurants across the city.
Wow.
So, actually pretty cool. Like, I would say that's kind of where I really discovered, like different sorts of foods. Like I remember there was like one place that had turtle soup. It's like, turtle soup? What's that? Gotta try it. Let's all try it.
Oh man. Were you getting everybody in your family to try wacky stuff? You were like, I'm jumping in. Who's jumping in with me? And they're like, no, thank you. And you're like, no, come on, turtle soup.
Yeah, we would try, like, yeah, turtle soup, fried ice cream, stuff like that. Just anything that was different and unique, would try it. But also, you know, had to have the pizza. Chicago's known for its deep dish pizza, so lots of pizza places there. It's like, you know, I have this every day, but I want some more.
Well, it's so nice, yeah. Too, to have all these different restaurants that maybe you didn't have a chance to check out, or, you know, you thought, oh, this isn't really a place for me, but then they have this booth so you can go up and not only, like, try the food and be like, oh, maybe it is for me, but you get, like, maybe one or two representatives from the restaurant itself, and you can be like, oh, they're not mean, because I remember growing up, there were, like, a few restaurants that I always thought, oh, I can't go in there. Everyone's snooty in there. And I don't know that anyone was actually snooty. It's just what I thought. But if I had, like, met two nice people that were like, hey, you want some chowder? I'd be like, yeah, I do. Give me some. You know I do. Just inherently at all times.
Yeah, it was definitely like that. I felt kind of uncomfortable going to any sort of, like, sit-down restaurant or whatever. Because I thought, you know, what are you going to think of me? Or I... you know, I'm poor, I don't belong here, or, sure. You know. So it wasn't until being an adult that, you know, going to, like, the restaurants was kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, when I was younger, I watched, so Channel 11 was PBS or WTTW or whatever, and on PBS there were tons of cooking shows.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like Julia Child, but there was all sorts of shows and I watched like all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really tried the things, but I internalized just everything I watched because I was just like dreaming, of like, ooh, look at this meal or look at this thing. And I just kind of, by watching all of those shows, like I watched that more than cartoons, by watching all of those shows, I was kind of mesmerized by the creativity and by like the people just cooking really cool things. There was this one chef, I think his name was Martin Yan, and his show was called Yan Can Cook. And his phrase was like, if Yan can cook, so can you.
I love it.
And he would like chop things really quickly and,
so fun.
Yeah. So I really like that sort of thing. And It wasn't until like more recently, maybe like by recently, it's like 10 years ago or whatever, sure, that I realized that, oh, all of those things I was watching actually sunk in, and I I know some things, you know.
Yeah, no, that's really great that they actually did. I watched a lot of the cooking shows too, and I'll tell you what, they did not sink in. So I appreciate for you that you were like, wait, I remember Yan telling me to do this mm-hmm. thing. I'm like, I was obsessed with Julia Child as a child. Did I mm-hmm. learn anything about her cooking? No, I'm terrible. No, I am a stares at a recipe and does it by the letter kind of gal. Like, I just can't. I can improvise lots of things. I'm sure we'll get mm-hmm. into improv, but not with food. Not with food. I cannot do it.
Yeah, I before I even knew what improv was, I never believed in using a recipe, and maybe it's because of that's the way my mom cooked. You know, a pinch yeah. of this and a touch of that. You know,
yeah,
splash of this. But it felt more fun to like experiment. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, what if I did this? What happens? Oh, yeah. Okay. That didn't work. Let's try it different next time.
Oh, man. No. I appreciate the easygoing nature you have when yeah. it doesn't go well. You're so, like, pleasant about it. You're like, oh, okay. I guess we're going to have to start this soup over again. Let's try again. Like, that's super easygoing. I'm like, I put too much salt in, and I'm like, this is ruined. Why?
Well, yeah. Well, there was this one time where, like I said, I grew up extremely poor, and I used to like hot sauce on everything. Like some things I couldn't eat, like I couldn't eat eggs without hot sauce. Mm. So there was a point where we did not have hot sauce. And I hadn't mentioned this before, so this is not a callback, I guess, but since I would deconstruct everything in order to understand how it worked.
Ooh,
that's how
fun.
I figured out things. So I had, in this instance, I had deconstructed like hot sauce to see what was in it. It's like, oh, these are the things that are in it, so maybe I can make it. So we had, vinegar. So we were living in this, this apartment, building that had lots of other people in it. And the ingredients said like red pepper. I was like, oh, we have some red pepper flakes. Okay. And it said vinegar. I was like, okay, we have that too. What happens if I just boil these things together? So I boiled vinegar with red pepper flakes, and it sent a horrible scent throughout the entire building.
Oh my god.
I had to open up the doors and the windows, and people were walking by like, what you doing? I'm like, I'm making hot sauce.
You're like, clearly making hot sauce.
Like, isn't it obvious? I mean, how do you think it's made?
Yeah. You think it just grows on trees? It doesn't. I checked.
Exactly.
I looked for the seeds. There are no hot sauce tree seeds available.
Exactly. I'm sorry. I'm not bougie like you, and I buy my hot sauce. I make my own.
Yeah. Listen, this is artisanal, okay?
Yes, but it was it didn't turn out very well.
Sure. I was really hoping there'd be like and after that first try, I tried six more times and I figured it out, and now I'm releasing Jermaine's hot sauce, available now.
I did not try that again as a youth, but yeah, now if I wanted to make hot sauce, it's pretty easy. But that's, you know,
yeah,
this
you
is
don't...
adult me.
Yeah. I mean, but you spend so much time, you probably have watched 100, you know, 100 more cooking shows, and one of them, they talked about making hot sauce. You know what I mean? There's definitely that. There have been things where I've watched cooking shows, and I agree with you. Like, I'm not, so I'm personally not a great cook, as has been established. you had a great cook in your mom. She showed you how to do it, how to improvise in that way. My mom was great at ordering at the restaurant, and like that was about it. And calling for takeout. It was like, oh, good. Okay. We can do that. Great. I'm also excellent at that, but I try to cook now in my home. And, so I have to kind of teach myself. And so I'm obsessed with the cooking shows as well. I watched them growing up also on PBS. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of, like I said, Julia Child, Lydia Bastianich, which is what led me to watch like MasterChef. And I've learned so much from those kinds of shows. Once I got into Gordon Ramsay, I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to get all over this guy. He'll teach you how to make anything. Like, he's like, I just pulled this coconut off a tree. Let's do it. Plus, he's British, so he has that like extra fancy. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, it's so funny. I've never thought about that. I've fully internalized that like British accents mean rich in my head until you said it. And now I'm like, oh my God, I totally have that in my psyche, like 100%. That's so wild. But yeah, just the idea of putting stuff together of these people who are presenting. I think that's for me what I really liked. I'm a big performer, meaning mm-hmm. when I was a little kid, even I would do a Julia Child impression for my mom's friends, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to cook, but I knew how to pretend to cook, you know? classic improv object work being done right now. And like that, the presentation of it, the fact that this person, now these days there's like 40 million people with YouTube shows and like there's everybody with a camera thinks that they're an influencer, right? But back in the day, the idea that these like handful of people were like, yes, I will cook in front of a camera and talk to that camera like it's my friend was wild. Was like a crazy thing to have these kinds of performers. When you watched the show, were you inspired to perform in that way as well? Or was it more just did it really more stoke the fires of you as a cook?
That really stoked the fires of me as a cook, but I didn't know it. I think other shows, I would perform younger as like my niece and I in dancing. Mm. And it would literally be, so music videos were not really a thing, in the 70s.
Right.
Not until the 80s. But any sort of dancing we'd see on a show, a TV show, a cartoon, Tom and Jerry, whatever, we would mimic that. And then we would put on a show, like a dancing show, of us doing things that we've seen and also inventing like moves. So we would perform like all the time
at home. Great. So when your older brothers and sisters come home from work, you're like, hold on. There's a show with dinner.
Something like that. Yeah. whenever the situation arose, like if there was an audience, we would be like, oh, hey, or there was some music playing. Oh, let's do our thing. Or somebody would say, hey, you do your dancing thing. You're like, oh yeah, we've been practicing this. So we would do our dancing.
So then I suppose your older brothers and sisters were supportive of you doing your shows for them. They weren't like, leave me alone, kid. They were like, yeah, do the dancing.
Oh yeah, they were supportive. Like one of the things is, so I have five brothers, one sister. All of the brothers were like dancers. And so in order for them to like, they were not like, they liked to like, I guess in the '70s or whatever, the whole dancing thing was, in, so you're dancing with like some sort of partner, like slow dancing or whatever. So they would practice with each other and with their friends. So I would be watching them practicing with each other too. It's like, oh, okay, I guess it's okay for guys to dance with guys too, you know.
That's nice.
Yeah. But they were practicing because they, you know, so that when they went to a party and they were dancing with like a woman, they would like know what to do.
Wow, I really appreciate that. Like, that effort is like, man, I hope that dates I've gone on have prepared. Like, wow, that's like some solid work. Like, good on them for like trying.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm sure a lot of people go around in the world and they're like, yeah, she'll date me. It's fine. But they were putting effort in, and I like that. That's good. That's good. Oh, for man, sure. That's so fun. Also, I love the idea that you're like, they're dancers. And I was like, tell me more about this face. but it sounds more like it was like, you know, dancing at clubs and like on dates and stuff like that. Not yes. like, yes. oh, well, you know, three of my brothers are in the ballet and...
No. No. It was just dancing at, you know, parties or clubs, or usually it would be like some sort of house party. So it used to be called a set, S-E-T. That was the house party. So usually it would be that. So sometimes it would be at our place, or it'd be somebody else's place or whatever.
Oh, fun. And, party at your place.
And they charge like whatever, $5 or something to get in. And that would help to pay the rent.
Love it. That's great. Why in my whole life have I never charged $5 to come into my house? I'm doing it. It's happening now. Sorry, friends. If you'd like to come visit, there's a cover. I'm into it. That's smart. I enjoy that. I like that dancing was the beginnings of your creativity, and cooking. These are both such fascinating little views into the way that you're creating art. How did you go from dancing and cooking to performing on stage, like doing plays and improv? How did you find that?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. So I moved on a little bit, as I got a little older and, still poor, to find ways to actually be creative. Like I knew that there were things inside of me that needed to get out, but I had no way of getting them out. So I would explore things and I ran into poetry. And like, I was in some class and this was like fourth grade. And you had to, we had to write some poem for some reason or another. And I was like, oh, this was fun. So then I just started writing poetry like a bunch. So much to the fact that it was, some of the things were published. And by the time I got to high school, there was this creative wall or wall of creativity that one of the English teachers did, where things would be posted that were like on large pieces of paper or whatever. And they ended up dedicating that entire wall to me. Because of like all the things, all of the poetry that I would write.
Wow, that's amazing.
I didn't have like any other means of expression. So, you know, writing something down on paper that I already had was the way for me to sort of express myself.
Yeah. You know, they say if the beauty of writing is anyone can do it, because all it requires is a pencil and a piece of paper.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the beauty of writing and the beauty of poetry. It's in all of us. That's mm-hmm. so great that the school was so supportive of you, though, that like you're writing all this stuff, you know, especially in the time period you're talking about, you know, you're in, at this point, you're in middle school. It's probably like the 80s and stuff like that. It wasn't mm-hmm. exactly the most like, yeah, let that kid be a poet kind of time, you know, like
no.
There was a lot of, you know, like, why are you not trying to be a stockbroker? You know, like, and you're like, listen, I'll get the Ferrari. but I really appreciate that your school was so supportive to you and dedicated the whole creative space. Was it like dedicated to you? Like they called it the Jermaine Trice wall and everybody's stuff went up, or was it like 1 week or month or whatever was just all your stuff?
it started out as like the writer's corner. And then, for 1 month, it was dedicated to just me. No one else got that honor. Just me.
Wow. You were just so prolific that they were like, we got to get it all up on here. That's so great.
As far as the, like, I did lots of school plays, but one of the thing that was most memorable was, I forget the name of the play, maybe it was called Simpleton or something like that. There was about some kid that was traveling, and I don't even remember. There was a main character who had tons and tons of lines. At one point, he gets to the king. I played the king. I did not have a lot of lines. But that apparently was the most memorable character of this whole play. And like when I changed schools, people were like, hey, I know you. You were the king in that play. It's just like, yeah, I guess so. And wow. That was back when like costumes were all made from like burlap. Some sort of cheap felt and burlap.
He was a regal king in his burlap robe.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, God. They were just making it out of what they could find, man. They were use this from the kitchen? And they're like, yeah, you know, empty the beans out and make yourself some costumes.
Exactly. Oh, cardboard God. And tin can scepter, whatever.
Oh, I'll tell you what. I've made those in my adult life. So let's, you know, I was like, let's give a quick shout out to the costume and props department at your school. Working hard with what they got. Good job. That's all you can do. Oh, man. You know, whenever I talk to people about their experiences putting on plays in, like, you know, junior high and high school, I'm like, I just have to reflect for a moment on those, like, those adults. The adults that made it happen, the people that like put the effort in, like, God bless them. Like, thank goodness there were people like us generations ago that were like, no, these kids are going to have a whole set of burlap costumes and I'm going to make it at my house while I'm watching, you know, Tan Can Cook. Like, I've got this. Hold on. I've got this beautiful robe for you, Jermaine. Everyone will remember this king. They're like, the thing about it was the burlap cape. Yeah, that's what I really loved about it. And then the kid played it. He was great. Oh, man. I love, too, this idea that you, like, change schools and people were like, you were the king. Like, did people from multiple schools come to this show?
Like, it was like a north and a south. So as you progress grades, you go to the south or the north, whatever. Maybe it was the north. Yeah, sure. So it's migrating north. Yeah.
Sure. Oh, right on. Now, I switched schools when I went into high school, too. I went to a private school to get away from some bullies. And I wondered if perhaps your creative side had gotten you into another program at a different school or something like that.
It did, actually.
Oh, tell me about
my writing. So when I was in junior high or whatever, my writing got me into a program at a different, completely different school all the way across town in the, you know, what at that time I called like the uppity area.
Everybody with British accents, the whole place.
Exactly. That's
like,
what
I don't understand. Aren't we still in Chicago? Yeah, no, it's exactly. Little Britain.
Little Britain, yeah. Little Manchester.
Yeah.
So it was once a week that I would have to travel. I traveled to this school for this special writing program. It was completely different than I was accustomed to. There were different. So, like where I grew up, it was like it was all black. There was no mixture of anything, but the school just across town had all different races and everything. It's like, whoa, this is cool. And like, I realized going to that school that I was a a big fish in a small pond. But just going across town, it was like, everything that these people are writing about is just so awesome. How am I going to keep up with these people? They're so good. So
that's great, though.
It was quite an experience, but it helped me actually to grow and expand my horizons outside of just mimicking things I saw on TV.
Sure.
So that was a very, very interesting experience.
Wow, I love that. I love the idea that creative arts was able to provide you with opportunities. You don't hear that a lot, and I appreciate that happened. Even though, like, I was talking smack about the 80s, like, they weren't super into creativity. They're a touch more into creativity than we are now. So, that program sounds pretty great. I'm really excited that you got to take advantage of it. Now, did you continue writing through high school? Were you creating projects and whatnot all the way through? Did that get you into college or later acting programs?
So I did write a lot through high school. But one thing I picked up while in high school was video. So there was this it's funny kind of saying it, but radio TV program. I say it's funny kind of saying it because it's like, that was a thing. People listened to the radio. So it's like, hey, you're going to be on the radio or you're going to be on TV. And so that inspired me to do more video. So when I went into college, it was more performance for video and film as part of my behind the camera. It was behind the camera and in front of the camera because, you know, if I was in a class for like TV production or whatever, you don't have any actors, so you have to be the actor too, you know. So we're switching, like, hey, today I'm, you know, the director. Tomorrow I'm an actor on a news show or whatever we happen to be doing.
Yeah.
So I really picked up a lot in college doing more of the acting and such. Really by being a talent on stage. I migrated more, or I felt more inclined to be behind the camera because I liked the tech associated with it, but I was equally as happy in front of the camera, especially when I got to exercise some of my musical abilities.
Oh.
I discovered, not at a young age, but maybe in my teens, that if I tried long enough, I could learn songs on the piano. We didn't have a piano, but my mom had like an organ, one of those old plug-in organs. So I would like play that, and like any song that was on the radio, I would kind of mimic it, just playing by sound. To this day, I still can't like sight read music. I read music, but not like sight read. I have to study it. But I would learn by listening and reproducing. So in the studios that, for my classes, my video classes, at Columbia College of Chicago, there were pianos there. In each of the studios. So it's like, okay, as long as I do something where I can play the piano, I'm in front of the camera. I'm that and dancing. So I'm sure there's lots of things out there of me playing the piano and dancing in addition to acting.
Lots of VHS tapes in the Columbia College Archive.
Yes, I'm sure there are lots of VHS tapes in the Columbia College Archive.
Were you like writing your own shows? Were you like parodies? Because you mentioned learning songs that already existed. Did you like learn the music to something and write a parody and do something like that?
Yep. I wrote parodies to lots of songs. I wrote new songs. I did parodies of like, so sitcoms were like a really big thing. Mm-hmm. So I wrote and performed in, or sometimes just directed, parodies of different shows. The Twilight Zone, which is not a sitcom at all, did a parody of that. The Cosby Show, parody of that. Just all kinds of whatever was on at the time, Family Ties.
Now, are these school projects or like your fun projects on your own? Like, are you
both?
Yeah. Oh, cool. So they let you do parodies for like lessons?
Yes. Well, you can do. There were school projects where you had to do like a music video or whatever. And, like, I even had like one class that was dedicated to music videos. That was the class. Which was kind of fun back then. So this was like early 90s, which was like really fun to have a class that's dedicated. It's like, you just make music videos. But, by being in the program, you could like check out equipment, anytime.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I did that. One of my good friends also had a VHS camcorder. So literally we'd go around like all the time, just like filming everything. I would make stuff. I was a master of in-camera editing, where it's like pausing and doing things. I did lots of mirror effects and all that. So lots and lots and lots and lots of, like, if there was a YouTube back then, I would have been like all over it for sure.
Yeah.
Because there was so much stuff and like so much that I was like, oh my God, I can get all of this out now. Like, you know, on the stage or in class, it's like, okay, you only have limited time to do that. But like my friend's camcorder, like, unlocked a completely new world.
Totally.
And it was like, I literally, I produced, but I wouldn't call it producing because it was literally all improv. Nothing was written down there. It was like, hey, look at that. There's a tree over there. Let's start filming stuff, you know? Okay.
Yeah, but like the in-camera editing, but like doing editing between like the VCRs the way they used to do, which I'm sure you did, like is producing. Like the effort it takes to put it together piece by piece, that's the producing. Whether you're improvising the acting or not, like even just pressing play on the cam or pressing record on the camcorder counts as producing. Like you're putting effort into making a product. And that matters. Like, I definitely had a camcorder when I was a kid, but did I know how to do any editing with it? No. Did I figure out how to make full videos? No. Nope. Absolutely not. I would instead do everything like it was a live show. It'd just turn the camera on and I would just present in front of it. Like, there was a stage and I was on it, and then I would just move in and out of it in that thing, as opposed to that smart, like, oh, you could hit pause on the record and move somewhere else and have another scene. Yeah, I've heard about that, but I never did that when I was a kid. And then later, now we have technology to do all sorts of things. I can edit video. Yeah, now I can. But, you know, know, took me years. I'm in my 40s now. I didn't know how to do it back then. Now, do you think your love of technology was a throwback to your interest in deconstructing stuff? You mentioned that with reference to recipes. Is that connected to technology as well?
It is. Yeah, because, like, again, it's, to me, I think it all, it all boils down to, or goes back to, like, growing up poor. So you don't have, like, the luxury of, if the fan is broken, getting another one.
Sure.
You gotta figure out how it works and fix it. Or if there is a, you know, like a bike, like, I don't think I ever had a new bicycle. I built bicycles based off of old parts.
Yeah.
By figuring out how does a bike work, you know?
Totally.
So my love of technology does stem from that, like, understanding how things work. And one of the things that, I realized in college was that it was possible to merge those two things. My major was something that didn't really exist when I started, but became a thing. It was called multimedia. Mm. I did 3D animation and graphics. In addition to film video, and like a lot of the people I went to school with are, you know, they work in, you know, like DreamWorks and all that stuff. Disney. They work for, do special effects for film companies, or they do video games.
Man.
Imagine
how different their, like, current job is compared to what you guys learned in college. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, I think they've helped to move, you know, to enhance the industry as well, I think. But yeah, everything is completely different. So like all of the things that I did, like in college, were like mixtures of tech and creativity and video and all that stuff together. It's like, oh, what about this? What if I did this, this, and this, and put all this stuff together? So it was really fun. And then I ran into the point where, my scholarship ran out in college. And I needed to make some money. So I had to get like a corporate job. As a person who had always considered himself a creative, getting a corporate job, even though what I was doing was working with Photoshop and all that stuff, was not creative. It was like selling out as far as I considered it.
I hear you. I was also in my 20s. I understand.
Yeah.
I know how it feels. Yeah.
It's like, oh man, I didn't have like, you know, a sort of, parental support system, financially to, you know, support me or whatever. So I had to support myself.
Sure.
Had to get a job. So, as I went through like work, I would always find myself like kind of bored in the business world and trying to find creative outlets. One of the first creative outlets I found was Second City. Mm. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's like what I do at home every day, just doing whatever I kind of described it as doing whatever I feel like doing. or saying whatever I feel like saying, whatever's on my mind. I spent like a lot of my free time at Second City, learning improv, learning. I was still, mind you, a kind of shy person, and less on stage, very shy person. So people say, oh, wasn't that the time when such and such was there and such was there? was like, they were probably there, but with me, I was like in there doing my thing, and then I was immediately gone, you know? So, these people were probably there. Like, did you meet Will Ferrell?
Maybe, but I was very busy. I had a lot going on. I was not. Yeah. I was not like, hey, Will, you seem like you could be famous in 20 years. No, I was doing my class, and then I went home because I had to go to bed because I had to wake up the next morning to go to office.
Go to work.
Yeah. I know. I think about the same thing. I was in my 20s when UCB started, and I did not go to UCB because I was busy with other things. When I moved to town, I found one open mic and a job, and then, like, that was it. Like, I was like, I'd go to the job, I'd go to the open mic. I'd go to the job, I'd go to the open mic. Like, this was my social life. So when people were like, well, didn't you? I wasn't looking for something else. I wasn't like, let's see. Let's find a different area. I've established this friend group. Let's leave them, though, and go somewhere else. No, I had that figured out, right? I like this. I like that you're doing. So did you take classes at Second City? Were you, which parts of it were you getting involved in? I know that you're a writer and you create things. Were you creating videos and stuff with all of your knowledge?
Was not creating videos at Second City. At that time, they still didn't have their, like, there's a full, like, film school at Second City, but that did not exist during that time.
Oh, sure.
So I did the whole improv program. I did some sketch writing. And I did tons of workshops on different things. And I found that I gravitated mostly to musical improv because it felt to me outside of like video and tech, which are my passions, like total passions, it felt to me like the thing that I was most natural at. Like, oh, you mean I just can make up a song? I don't have to remember the lyrics or anything, just make it up? Yeah, I'm down for that totally. So I gravitated a lot to musical improv.
Yeah, that's great.
And then I moved out of the city.
Yeah, okay, great. I was just about to ask about that, but I wasn't sure where we were at in the timeline. So Chicago is a booming, creative place. So many things going on there. Now, I understand because I'm from Boston, and every time I told people I was going to move from Boston to go to college, they were like, there's hundreds of colleges here. Why are you leaving? And I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm good. I've experienced Boston. Thank you. And we're finished. I'm going to sign adios and get out of here. Right now. Was it like that for you? Were you like, okay, Chicago's great and all, but I've done what I feel like I can do. I need to move on with my life adventure. What inspired you to move out?
So I moved to the suburbs, primarily because of work. So I was no longer working in the city. I was working in the suburbs, and the just getting there was just like, it was like, okay, I have to deal with all this traffic every single day. Why don't I just live closer?
Yeah.
So, you know, it ended up being cheaper living in the burbs too. And so it was really out of necessity, because I love living in a city. I love the sounds of the city, the smells of a city. And like suburbs are really boring to me.
Sure.
But, you know, I moved to and grew to love the suburbs, because of having to move there for work. That was really the main reason. And I started where I was not going to Chicago, like, a lot, to the city, maybe to visit family, maybe to go to a club occasionally, but I wasn't going there a lot.
Yeah.
And because of that, I saw my creative side kind of dwindling away. Then I kind of got built up enough money to kind of start taking more classes and stuff in other places, or taking time off to go to the city to do classes and things like that. But I still didn't have like the same level of like exposure or immersion into like creativity in the suburbs as I did when I was in the city. So from the improv perspective and performing perspective, it wasn't until a few, like many years later, that reemerged.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you got to focus on that corporate job. If it pays the bills, you got to do it. You know, I totally get it. Yeah. There's something about having to, certainly in your like 20s, when you're kind of establishing who you are separate from your family, like, sometimes you really have to dig into whatever job it is, right? And I appreciate the idea that you were like, listen, I just moved to be closer to my job because that's where I was spending most of my time. And it was a waste of the other parts of my time to spend it all traveling to and from. Like, I would like to read a book. How about instead of driving for 3 hours, I get to read a book because it's 20 minutes home, right? Yeah, there's something to that. And then, so was your you mentioned your love is in technology. Is that where your corporate jobs were and are?
Yes, definitely in technology, but not in media. I've never really worked in media. So I like the merging of the two. And I've mostly only done just technology, pure technology.
Sure, as a job.
And that's, as a job. So aside from like my first like real job that was at R.R. Donnelly, who's known as a printing company who printed the phone books.
What a gig.
I worked a lot in media there, and did do some video because they were in other worlds as well. So, images and video, is what I did there. So it was kind of fun. But it was still kind of old school. They still believed in unions and stuff like that.
Sure.
Cause that's,
I feel like that's a big Illinois thing.
Exactly.
It was a big thing in Massachusetts too. Lots of unions. I spent a lot of my childhood holding picket signs for unions. So there was a lot of that. Yeah.
So there was definitely a lot of that there. But I didn't really have a lot of creative outlet there, except for when I'm just skipping all these parts of my life. So
it's okay. You tell whatever stories you want to tell. You can skip whole sections. It's fine. But if you're I want to tell you about this, tell me. I'm into it.
That's – so I taught for a while. At that stage in my life, to make money, I used to teach teachers. So I was for the Chicago Board of Education, an independent contractor.
Wow.
Who actually I taught like software programs to teachers around the city.
Right. Because it was new. They needed to know it. Now they got to teach it, but they didn't learn it in school. Totally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest and most fun things was when I went back to my old high school. So I had a contract there. So in the early 90s, which was literally shortly after I had graduated from there, I was doing this while I was in college too.
Yeah.
So I had to, there was a mandatory class for all of the teachers at the high school where I went. And they had to learn from me, which was wonderful.
Totally. You're like, hi guys, how's it going?
including like, you know, there were two computer teachers. It's like, no, you're not exempt here. You're So yeah, I had to teach them like some software.
Yowza.
Where I like charged, like, I forget how much it was, $150 an hour or something for my services.
That's right.
Which was like, you know, $1 million for me back in, you know, the early 90s. You know? Like, look at all this money I'm getting.
$150 an hour is nothing to sniff at for sure.
Yeah.
But you were worth it. You were worth it. They needed to know what that technology was, and you knew what it was. So, yeah, you know. There's something, I think even today, there's something we like to brush off younger people like, oh, yeah, they don't get it. They don't understand the world the way I understand it. But the way technology has been moving during pretty much our entire lives, you have to turn to people younger than you to be like, hi, I understand that you get how to do this technological thing. Could you teach me? Because I have reached the point where I know as much as I know, and there's so much more. So the idea of that, I mean, like, good on them for hiring you and for, like, accepting that you happened to be at a point where you had special knowledge that they needed, you know, like, that's great. I mean, it's important. It's important to recognize when you need a skill and get any person of any age who might be an expert in it to help you.
Yeah. And that kind of parlayed into me teaching college. So I taught web design at a college in Illinois. I actually designed the class because web design wasn't a thing. So, so I, and this was still in the early 90s.
They're still teaching the same like class kinda, that you created like, now.
they probably are. no, so maybe closer to mid 90s, I think. So yeah, I was like 24 years old or whatever, and I was a college professor.
Yeah.
Which was kind of fun because a lot of my students were like older than me. There were the younger people, but then there were the older people. And one of the things I would do first day of class every time is I would so it was taught in a computer lab, so it was just a bunch of computers around, and then there's like a desk with a larger computer, well, a larger monitor, and that was like the teacher's desk. But I would go in, I'd pretend like I'm just one of the other students because I was, you know, I'm like 49 now, and if I'm not shaven, I still have the baby face. Imagine when I was 24, how baby I looked. So I'd be like, yeah, I heard this class was good. My class was extremely popular. People would like try to add it. Like there would be people sitting outside, but no one, you know, there was no social media, so no one knew what I looked like, the teacher. It was like, oh, this is like an awesome class. We need to take this class. So I would sit there and I'd be like, yeah, I heard this guy was a jerk. and then all of a sudden after everyone got into the class, I get up, I'm like, okay, hi, welcome to, like, no, you're just joking. I'm like, no, I'm really the teacher.
You're like, here's my official ID. See,
exactly.
I use this to check in, see everyone, pass it around. I'm legit. Oh my gosh. Exactly. That's funny. Man, actually, I love it. So popular. You got like, you know, everybody wants to take your class. Because it's fun, because you helped people understand stuff in a fun way.
That's exactly it. Thank you for putting those words out there, because that was really it. It was like new, fun. I don't believe in book learning. I believe in practical learning. I developed all the materials for the class myself, because a lot of people are like, oh, why don't you do like a lot of the other professors do, like write a book and require it so you can get the money? It's like, no. Literally, that's what professors do. It's like, oh, I'm going to write a book. This is required reading for the class. And that's how I make my money.
Yeah, that's how you become a best-selling author, is by forcing people to read your book.
Exactly. But I developed all the materials. They were all more light, in many cases they were digital, as opposed to being printed. But I'm really more of a practical learner, because that's how I learn myself, and I believe that it's really important to learn by doing.
Yeah.
So all of the exercises that I had people doing were all hands-on. It's like, this is a lab class. It's not a, this isn't theory of web design. This is do it, you know? and I actually did get like a couple of my students hired at different companies, as web designers, because awesome. I had a lot of, contacts in different places. So it was kind of
imagine all the imagine all the students that you might have who are like right now creating like major computer programs that we're dealing with all the time. Like they were in your class figuring it out for the first time, and now they're like on the board at Microsoft going like, well, actually, like, oh man, that is amazing.
That is very possible. I wish I like remembered all of those students, because I had lots of classes.
Yeah.
one thing you said that reminded me of, you said I show my ID, my official ID, that reminded me of another story. So I'm going to digress just a tiny bit and tell that story. So you remember I said that I was a independent contractor at the Board of Education. Mm-hmm. Chicago Board of Education. So I taught at lots of different schools. One of the things I had an ID, and for one of the schools that I worked in a lot, I even had an ID specifically. It wasn't like the corporate ID. It was the ID for that school, because I was there like once a week or whatever. So I had one specifically for that school, faculty ID. So one of the things that brought me joy, because mind you, I was in my very early 20s and looked like I went to the school. There would be like teachers that were like hall monitors that would sit at the end of the hall. And, I would like go into the hallway and say, hi, and then I just take off running, and they'd be like, come here, what are you doing, get to class, and then I'd walk back, and I was like, no, I don't feel like going to class. I would do this to all the people, and I'm like, I don't feel like going to class, like, you get to class, or I'm going to send you to the office, and that this was like my joy, like once a week of doing this, and then they'd say, okay, I'm calling the disciplinary whatever, and I was like, okay, you know what? I work here. What are you talking about? And then I show them my ID. Like, oh, it was like, yeah, you're going to be in my class later. So, so you should treat me nice.
You better be nice to me or else you get a D. Who needs their professional development credits? You? I thought so.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, that is so that funny.
It would be so much fun doing that. I loved it like so much.
So a few stories that you've told are coming together thematically for me, and I want to ask you about what you're doing now, which is, so you're talking right now, you're telling this story about how there are, you know, you're working, you look too young, you're messing with the teachers. And mm-hmm. I like this idea of you subverting expectations. Like, you know that people look at you and expect X, and you're like, mm-hmm. I am not X, I am Y, and I am going to mess with you until you are forced to acknowledge that Y is the truth. And I really appreciate that. From like a performance perspective, mm-hmm. and also from a perspective of, you know, a lot of us who are involved in theater and improv in this world, we feel a little other, you know? And so mm-hmm. when you can have an opportunity to have a person's expectations of you flipped, there's something mm-hmm. so satisfying about that. You've also mentioned that you really like deconstructing things. I really love this as a theme for you because I feel like mm-hmm. the idea of deconstruction plays in every story that you've told me so far, from like mm-hmm. creating things and like figuring out how to edit with just a camcorder to creating your own classes that you're teaching on web design because, well, they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So the current project that you're working on now is sort of both of those things where it's like you kind of figured out part of theater is there's lots of different parts, right? There's mm-hmm. the actor and the director and different things. You took it apart and were like, well, let me see if I can run a theater on my own. And so you figured out all the different parts so that you could put it back together in your own special way. And mm-hmm. I noticed when I was researching your improv school, the improv place, that it is also for the purposes of, you know, subverting expectations. If you're the kind of person where you walk into a theater and people are like, I expect this of you. And you're like, well, that's not actually what I am. In mm-hmm. the quote unquote normal theater world, they're like, well, get out. But in yours, you're like, be who you are. Let's see yep. who that is. I know that people expect you to be X, but you are Y. Let's have that Y be on stage and have the best time in the world. So, like, tell me what inspired you to get the improv place started and create mm-hmm. this open space for people.
So, back in 2016, I was kind of in a place at work where I was in a very toxic environment, and I kind of needed more outlets. And I was like, you know, what can I do? I started DJing at clubs, and that wasn't enough. It was cool. I had fans.
Of course you do. You're a guy who's got fans. People are a fan of you.
which is kind of funny to have that I have like the fans, but I'm so shy. But it's like I love having fans. anyways, so I would do that. And then I was like, oh, I need to start doing something that I used to do again. So I had moved to the DC area. I actually still had my house in the suburbs of Chicago, but I, also had a residence in the DC area, cause that's where my work was. That was a place that was very toxic. And I just needed kind of a way to get out of that. So I started doing improv again. And one of the things I noticed when I was doing, improv was, there was a theme, and it probably existed back when I was at Second City in Chicago, but I didn't notice it then because I was, you know, younger and less observant, I guess. I don't know.
Too busy to notice.
Exactly. So there was a theme, and the theme that I was identifying a few themes. One is kind of the whole like pay to play sort of model where you don't really get any stage time. as a student, you have to take all these classes and you get like one sort of a showcase for the class performance. And maybe a couple other, you know, if you're lucky, but you don't get a chance to show your talent. The other thing I noticed was that people that were performing, all kind of were the same. Either they looked the same, they didn't look like me, or it was like the same people performing like all the time. Like, it's like, okay, there's Bob again. Okay, now wait, let's introduce our next troupe. Didn't he just perform with the other troupe? You know, it's like not really getting a chance to see like talented people get on stage. And I started, so I love to travel. Things that I, you know, dreamed of doing as a kid, once I got like money, it's like, I'm going to do it. So travel is one of them. So as part of travel, I also experienced lots of improv theaters, either taking workshops while I was there or joining in jams or anything I could do to get on the stage. But as I traveled, I noticed the same sort of things happening like anywhere in any country. It was like exactly the same model. And it's like, there's like the same people. Like I went to two shows on two different days at this place, and all I'm seeing are the same people. And then I also travel a lot to New York because I like to do like hip hop, improv, freestyle improv. And that just didn't exist and still doesn't really exist in the DC area. So I would travel there. And I was seeing it in New York a lot too. It's like, but this is New York. Why would there be, you know, such exclusivity and such so many like cliques of people? But there was. So, I thought that I would just start something. On top of just the whole, you know, theaters not being inclusive and not really getting a chance to perform, unless they play, there was also the sort of boredom that I saw with just the normal, like, okay, we're doing regular long form improv. If you're not a person who's into long form improv, you may or may not find this funny, but hey, we're going to laugh at our own jokes. Like that's, and I'm not knocking long form improv, but a lot of the audiences that I've seen in most long form improv shows are people who do long form improv.
Oh yeah.
And families of people who do that. And it's, and it's not really, I don't know. For me, it gets a little too one note. And aside from just, you know, in my life in general, I like diversity in my entertainment. And I was finding that that really wasn't happening. So I started the improv class. I started it in 2019 as a pop-up theater. because I traveled so much, my idea was to actually have pop-ups at the different locations where I traveled, and really to serve like talented people who are underserved, and give them a voice, and with the full intention of having a physical space, home theater, where I would bring those people, pay for those people to come into the home space, people who performed in London or whatever, to come back to the home theater to perform there. I decided to, before like really ramping up operations, to get a nonprofit status, because of tax breaks and because in order to get space, there would be it a lot cheaper to get space, as a nonprofit.
So smart of you. What a smart move.
I got the nonprofit status, on March 12th of, 2020. Yes. That was both a bad thing and a good thing.
Sure.
So it was bad because I had all these plans to ramp things up,
yeah,
all this in-person stuff in multiple places with the pop-ups and getting space. Two good things came from that. The first good thing is that I didn't really have I hadn't invested in staff or anything like that, so I had no overhead. So that was cool.
Yeah.
The best thing that came from that was that I suddenly remembered that I went to school for film, and I'm a technologist. So yeah. I was like,
you're the king of technology, guy.
Stuff, yeah. Why is this a problem for me? Why don't I just do these things?
Sure.
So it reminded me of things that I really liked to do, which is like, you know, producing videos, which I hadn't done anything like that in like a long time, and like building software, which I do every day, but not for entertainment.
Sure.
I started doing shows, and one of the very first show that I started was a show called Voices. And that show was really meant to embody the mission of the theater, which was giving a voice to the voiceless. Sorry, I get a little emotional about this because I'm passionate about it.
Absolutely.
It was a good show. I got people to come on who, it was mostly not improv at all. It was about people who had something to say or some sort of performance or whatever that they wanted to do. It's like you get 5 or so minutes to do whatever you want. We will give you the stage.
Yeah.
So.
Oh man, what a great thing that you provided for people, that you were able to give them a stage when they had something to say, but nobody else was going to give them that stage. That's really wonderful that was part of what you created. Your talents all the way through, as you've been telling me, your whole life are sort of seem to build up to this idea, to helping people, to giving them this opportunity to be the best that they can be and to get their stories out there. Really awesome, wonderful work, as far as like providing a service for people, as you mentioned, who were underserved. Mm-hmm. How did the people who performed feel about it? Were they like, oh man, I'm so glad I had this opportunity to get this out? You know, even earlier you were talking about how you had all this creativity inside and you needed to find a way to get it out. Uh-huh. Not everybody's given people these opportunities, and not as many of them are as confident in their own abilities to just do it without being someone telling them, yeah, it's okay, you can do it. So mm-hmm. the fact that you were able to tell people, it's okay, you can do this, let's do it. Like, how empowering and great of that for you to provide that for the performers in your group.
That was great for me and for them. I, you know, found people across the world to interact with and to come onto the show. And, there was one guy who was like a rapper, and he just wanted a place to share his raps, and he was on the show multiple times. He was so appreciative that his second time on the show, he wrote a tribute rap about the show. So it was a very cool show. So, and this was also at the very beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So you had people who not only were, had not had an outlet before, but now they have really no chance because they're like cooped up in the house and it's like, what do I do now?
Yeah. And faced with potentially the craziest thing that they've ever had to face in their lives. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness they had you and the community that you built to give them a stage to express. I mean, we all went through some wild stuff in 2020, and not that it mm-hmm. has gotten less weird, but at least at this point, I feel like we're like, yeah, I'm used to weird at this point. But the fact that you were able to give people a chance during like the roughest time mm-hmm. is what a great way to use your skills and to use your abilities to share with other artists.
I think it was great. I also did a few workshops. So the way I like to do workshops, since I don't always have the time or energy to both produce and act at the same time or whatever, As I tend to bring in guests, like guest artists to do workshops. Probably the most popular one, and I like to make them free, because it's really more about the learning and the exposure and the experience, and I don't believe in charging for anything. Unless the money is going directly to the instructor, but, like I pay the instructors, to teach the free classes. The most popular one that had attendance from literally all over the world was a musical improv workshop that I hosted. There were people from the UK. There were two people from Spain, somebody from the Philippines, somebody from Alaska. It's like, how did you even hear of me in Alaska?
I like how you're like, Philippines makes sense, but Alaska?
Yeah. It was kind of interesting because all these different time zones represented, I was on the East Coast then, so Philippines was like 12 hours different. So I think this workshop was at 2 a.m. in the morning, and this guy was like, this is a free musical improv workshop. I am going to be there, even if it's 2 a.m. in the morning.
He's like, how's it going, guys? I'm ready to sing. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I did that one time. I did a musical improv workshop with Improv Comedy Bangalore, and got up at like 4 a.m. to hang out with them and do something. So, and I remember it being like so exhilarating to be like, to feel like I was on the other side of the world. Like I was like, I'm with you guys. We're together. There is something really great about our current sort of globalization of, mm-hmm. you know, artistic community, that we're able to connect with people all over the world. And what seems like in a few years ago, it would have been like, what? There's no way you're talking to people from all over the world. And now it's like, I'm like, yeah, like every day I'm talking to people from all over the world. Like yeah. even where we initially met, the group, which I'm always talking about, audience, you guys know this, Improvisers Talking About Food. It's like such a great international group. It's like such a cool way to meet people from all over the world and to interact with them in a way that's like, yeah, we could talk about our art, but we're going to talk about this other side thing and then mm-hmm. like acknowledge that we're all doing the same kind of art. Like, we get it. We're friends. But we're going to talk about spaghetti instead. Like, it's...
yeah, that actually made me think of something. So I have a bunch of projects in works right now. So one of the things I have to mention is that I did take some time off for various reasons. One, I was kind of burnt out because of all the level of production I was doing on shows. It would take a lot of energy out of me. But, you know, I was also mentally drained by a bunch of external factors, all kinds of things. You know, things happening in the world, et cetera.
Sure.
But there was one thing where that was very troubling to me and didn't get resolved until very recently, was there was another improv place that decided to we want this name. So they were in the UK. You are probably aware of them. They did eventually change their name. We talked and all that stuff. We had a show where we talked about, you know, the fact that, you know, they were changing their name, but there was, a significant amount of time, a year, where there was this, ambiguity as to, wait a minute, I know the improv place, but what is this? Who's who? So that was troubling for me and caused me to not be able to create.
Sure.
And again, that's recently gotten resolved, but like, it was a problem for me because I'm kind of a logical person. So even though I like to think outside of the box, things need to kind of fit in a box. And I need to be able to choose what's going to be outside of the box. I really felt that I couldn't really do anything. I felt kind of stuck for a long time there. I didn't really talk about it too much, until recently when we, did that co production where we talked about it, but it caused me to be not very creative, for almost a year.
Yeah, that can be so tough.
And so more recently, I was like, okay, I'm picking up things. So I did a lot of the Pandemic Chef because, you know, I love to cook. And it's like I'm doing this show, this Pandemic Chef show. I did do some other shows too, but not as much as like I came out the door doing like, you know, at least one show per week. It wasn't as much. Like if you go to my site, theimprovpost.org, there's a lot of, there are lots of the, shows that we did in the past, which are, you know, kind of fun things. But, one thing you said when you said, you were talking about the words, another side or the other side, makes me think of a show idea that I had. It's not posted yet, but it's a show that I want to do, which is really, it's an improv show, and I don't do a lot of improv shows, but it's an improv show that is about someone comes on as a character who is known for one thing, but they really want to talk about another side of them. So let's say you're a character who's like a singer and all you do is sing, but you really want to talk about crocheting.
Sure.
So you reminded me of, I need to get on that.
Yeah, fun. I like it. It's almost like the improv game where you have a secret, you know, like
yes.
You come on and they're like, I'm a famous singer, but what I really want to talk to you guys about is fly fishing. Like,
yes, it's exactly that game.
Yeah. It's yes, so fun.
But like in talk show format kind of thing.
Yeah. And also sort of honoring the layers of people, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, I feel like there have been times in our lives and our generations when, you know, they say, oh, you got to be this, you got to make a decision. Or what are you, this or this? And now I feel like we've accepted that people are varying shades of different things, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, he does this, but he also does that. And he also likes to do this thing. And it's not like, I don't understand. He's a software developer and he crochets. What does that even mean? Now it's like, well, there's a couple of hours in the day. I don't know if you've heard about it. And so this guy's got some various activities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that we can be these beautiful quilts of human beings with lots of different things in it. And it's not just like one note. That's a great thing to celebrate.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like you were saying before, like, you know, like thinking outside the box and shattering people's reality and what they think of you. I think, I'm all about that. Like, no matter what, like, I change the way I talk because of that, you know, mm-hmm. shattering the realities.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I don't have a Boston accent anymore on purpose. No, it's true. People had opinions about it. And so mm-hmm. I was like, no, I'm going to stop doing that.
But yeah, I do believe that there's always more to someone than what you see.
Yeah.
And you need to give them the opportunity to show that if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let people use their voice when they're ready to use it. Just provide mm-hmm. them the platform. That seems to be what you're doing with the Improv Place. That's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I want you to, like, so earlier on, it was like people weren't really getting it. Like, some people were, some people weren't. Just like, wait, you mean I could, like, perform or do whatever? I can come to you with a show idea and you'll just produce it? For free? It's like, yeah. Like, what do you want? What's in it for you? It's like, what's in it for me is helping you.
Yeah.
And that's still the case.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So great. Awesome. So one final question before we say adios. We've been chatting for a while, but let me just get one last little bit. Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about the project that you're working on and the ideas that we have, but what is the way that you are personally creatively filling your own cup? Like, you're doing a lot to help other people. And I know that that fulfills you on a certain level, but like, what do you do? And it doesn't even have to be like, oh, I'm writing poetry again. It could be like taking a walk. Like, what is it that you're doing to fill your own cup back up so that you are ready to, you know, share with other people?
So I've started producing more shows for me. So there's one thing I'm working on, and my fiance says that I hype this show up more than the actual show is going to be, but it's a show where you remember there was a Christmas animated Christmas show called The Year Without a Santa Claus, mm-hmm. and there was a heat miser and a snow miser.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it would be cool if those two had like basically a musical battle, kind of like a rap battle, versus. I'm doing that. So it's called Miser versus Miser. I'm playing all of the characters, writing all the music. It's kind of a big deal, but I keep doing these trailers and promos for it. and she's like, when are you going to stop doing promos and actually do the thing?
You're like, the promos edited together are the show. I'm just putting out small content. Listen, I'm a content producer now.
Exactly. It's small bites.
You get it. See, you always get your finger on the pulse of the technology. You know.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm working on that, and I am trying to focus on me and getting my voice out there, because if I'm not happy myself in performance, I can't be helpful to other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh man, Jermaine, thank you so much for spending time with me today and being on the podcast, sharing your story, just exploring all sorts of different parts of your journey. You've had such an amazing journey along the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Amy. It's been really great talking to you. It's been fun sharing. I wish I could have been more entertaining, but, you know.
You're very entertaining. Don't sell yourself short. Absolutely not. You're great. This has been wonderful. And I think that everything that you've talked about has been just a great resource for people who are listening, to empower them, not only to find a way to turn the things that they love into new shows and new ways to express themselves, but also to inspire them to help the people around them that maybe aren't so confident, don't have the knowledge and wherewithal to create stuff. Like, hey, I know how to do a bunch of stuff, but you guys don't. Do you want me to help you? Because I'm here for mm-hmm. you. And that's just amazing. It's a great thing that you're doing, and really super cool.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.